All right. It's Chapo. I'm just going to kick things off right away this week. We're joined now, making his second appearance on the show, someone who I regard as the greatest humanitarian of our times, a humble genius, a dreamer, and a beacon of hope for all of humanity. Elon Musk, how are you doing?
Yeah, good. Yeah, thank you. It's so great to be on the show again to share my vision with you guys. It's great to be with the Chapo clan.
Elon, you know, you're coming off an amazing week where you captured the world's imagination and rescued all of those children trapped in a cave in Thailand. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
It's a fantastic week. And, you know, it's building on a lot of other fantastic weeks. I haven't had a bad week since 1990 and the political events that happened in that year. But, you know... We are, you know, you got to forgive me because I'm here. We're on the ground in Phuket and we're still working on the operation. What we did together... with the royal government of Thailand, you know, getting the 12 soccer boys out of the tunnel. Just really the kind of inspiration that I need for my Space Force. And I was very inspired by the work of not only the young boys, but also of, you know, the government of Thailand. We did it together. We did it together. And SpaceX and Elon Musk could not have done what we did without some of the assistance of those people. So I have to be generous in that sense.
Probably the most crucial element of this rescue was the introduction of your personal child-sized submarines. Can you speak a little bit about the development of this
We've
technology?
We've been working on it. We've been working on it for years, a different program through SpaceX, one of our projects, because it takes so long to get to Mars. We were working on deep space pods so that we would be able to have, you know, children go between Earth and Mars if they have divorced parents, you know, like on an airline. And they'll be able to travel on their own, you see. And so we were working on that and we thought, hey, this is a perfect opportunity to, you know, reconfigure an existing project and try to get some headlines. And that's what we did. And it was really fantastic. They're perfect child-sized pods. They work whether the biological organism is alive or not. And they're just perfectly made for weaseling their way through an underground tunnel, whether it's in Phuket or whether it's in an undisclosed location where you'll see me surface again soon.
Elon, how do you respond to criticism? I mean, it's shocking to me that...
I want to cut you off there real quick, if I might, Will. The way I respond to criticism is by being online all day long, arguing with people on Twitter. Because let me say something. You're socialist this, socialist that. I'm also a socialist. You know, I'm a socialist who happens to believe in the power of the markets and extra political power for billionaires.
Some people have said that this rescue that you did of these children, and again, they wouldn't have been rescued without your help, was just simply a publicity stunt to gain get some, you know, cheap heat for you and your company.
A publicity stunt. That sounds like something that Warren Buffett and his little troll boys would have put out there. Publicity stunt is when you have a Pillsbury Doughboy on TV getting poked and you go buy Pillsbury Dough. Publicity stunt is electrifying an elephant to prove that your kind of electricity is not the right kind of electricity. Which, by the way, we're going to go on a tour of the United States and Canada in the next couple of years, and we are going to be electrifying some elephants just to prove, actually, that the Solar City Vision and Tesla battery grid is perfectly operational. So it's going to be a positive exercise in electrifying elephants. No, what we were doing is we're saving children. We're saving children. And we went down there. We were specifically asked by the king of Thailand. He said, Elon, I have no plan. I don't know what to do. And I was communicating with him every day. We were on FaceTime. And I said, you know, you got to do this. And I'm going to get on the ship there. So we have a little submarines. We also are bringing over a little boring company, large drill. And the good news is the boys are out. And the Thai government has been kind enough to give us the site of the caves, and we're going to use it as a proving ground for Tesla, for SpaceX, for the boring company.
Wow, so you're going to put some more boys down there?
Well, sure. I mean, that's obviously down the line, but you got to engineer it first and make sure it's safe and not safe so you know what to allow for. They're all going to be real boys, but not before we put in a little boring company tunnel. We're going to widen it just a little bit so you can just comfortably move a tube of one child at a time through the tunnel. And it's going to be a perfectly horrifying attraction.
You know, people are so impressed with this rescue. They're reaching out, you know, to use your genius and your intellect to solve some of our society's other problems.
Yes, yes, that's good. I see the check cleared.
I've been seeing a lot of people ask you, you know, Alon, what can you do with your magnificent technology to make the people of Flint, Michigan have clean drinking water? What are you planning for that?
So we're talking about the Flint, Michigan. And yes, sure, no problem. I can get you drinking water. What do you want? Do you want it to be hard water? Do you want to bathe with it? Do you want to drink it? It's no problem at all. The solution is going to be done with nanocomputers. So we're working on that. We're working on that. We're working on biologically changing the people of Michigan so they don't need the same amount of water. We're working on installing solar panels in people's stem cells so that they can draw energy from the sun instead of from hydrogen and oxygen molecules. You know, this is the stuff of... we're inspired by the work of Isaac Asimov. We're inspired by the work of Robert Heinlein, you know? We're inspired by some great political thinkers of South Africa and a lot of other places. And we're going to make humanity lean. They're not going to need as much stuff, you understand?
Wow, is all I have to say to that.
I'm also working on a deodorant. There's going to be a deodorant. It's called, the fragrance is called Elon Musk. It's going to go into your armpits and it's going to just sort of biologically change your pheromones so that you just so that you smell like someone who belongs on Mars.
Epic, sir. Epic. Last question. I saw, you know, a story in the news today that you are one of the top donors to the Republican Congressional Caucus's re-election funds.
Yeah, sure. Is that the problem? I'm a socialist. I'm a socialist who believes in the revolution of the proletariat through donations to the Republicans. I'm playing a game of holographic chess that you can't wrap your mind around.
I can wrap my mind around it, but like I would expect a lot of haters online will, you know, be upset by this or, you know, say that it's some sort of hypocrisy on your part. But I don't think they understand that you're giving them money so that when the time comes for them to do right by you and the people of America, you can threaten to withhold that money.
Yeah, all I care about is how they're going to treat the future of humanity. And by that, I mean how they're going to treat my companies that I'm hoping to make billions of dollars off of. Look, I donate to all sides. I'm not a Republican. I'm nonpartisan. I donate to all sides. Yes, we're working with the Republican caucus to get them to support some very important libertarian issues. I'm also donating to Recep Tayyip Erdogan to make sure that Turkey, cleans out any political elements that get in the way of a massive SpaceX campus. We donate to all sides. I'm working with the Dutch royal family. We're working with the Saudi royal family. Obviously, we have connections now in Thailand. We're going to have a massive tunnel underneath Bangkok that may drop it into the mantle of the earth. But what it will be replaced with will be magnificent. Do you see the vision? Ad aspera per sanguinem. To the stars through blood. And sometimes the route to the stars, the quickest route, of course, is a straight line between two points. Sometimes that line points directly through the center of our Earth. That is why we must drill our way to the stars.
Mr. Musk, thank you so much for your time. On behalf of those boys rescued from the cave, I know they haven't done this to you personally yet, so I will do it on their behalf. Thank you, Mr. Musk, for saving our lives.
Yeah, we're monitoring with them. We're monitoring like we like what they did. And so we're going to monitor them and probably kidnap them into an X-Men program sometime in the next 10 years once they've fully completed adolescence. And if they can survive in those tunnels, we're going to shoot them in a Tesla to Mars and see if they can survive there.
What a beautiful vision of the future. Mr. Musk, thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you. Hold on. I got to attend to some of my engineering right here, if you don't mind. Pull his body out of the combine!
Every one out of 20 Trump kids has like the it factor. It's like every generation has a star. This Baron. And then like all these other kids are all just going to do like, you know, they're all going to do QVC ads for like, you know, swords made out of 9/11 metal.
Yeah, that's awesome.
But this one kid, I bet the daughter is like she's going to be like a cool Twitch streamer.
She's probably streaming already.
Yeah, she's probably like is in phase and we just don't know it.
Yeah, she's not going to be one of these useless fail children of privilege. She's going to be a Twitch streamer.
Twitch streamers are the only self-made people anymore.
That's not untrue.
Yeah, no, it is. They're the American dream.
You know what? That's 100% accurate. And that's also why I'm going to drown myself in a toilet soon.
All right, yeah. So, again, thanks again to Elon Musk for calling in. And once again, thank you for rescuing all those children. They would have died without you. Real quick, I want to get things started with a story, just very, very quickly, one that's very much in our wheelhouse. I know our fans love it so much when we talk about fast food franchises and defend the various horrifically disgraced spokespeople for said franchises.
I can hear the squealing of the hogs from here.
Papa John of Papa John's Pizza, unfortunately, has had to step down as head of the company and head pitchman for his pizza franchise because apparently on a conference call with, you know, shareholders or something, He said the bad word.
Yeah, he said the N-word, the noid.
You do not speak that name in the house, Papa.
Yeah, that's our word.
So just real quick before we get into this week's show, I would just like to...
Whenever you're trying to have a good time, some noid has to ruin it.
There's a difference between pizza guys and noids. Yeah.
So, yeah, I just want to make a pitch at the very beginning of the show for listeners of the show to... buy Papa John's pizza and then record videos of you throwing it in the trash, setting it on fire.
Shooting it like Skeet?
Yeah. Throwing it on the roof like Breaking Bad. Or just like just stock up on like a million of those the garlic dip cups.
Yeah, yeah.
Pour it all into one big jug and then film yourself just pouring it into the gutter or something to protest
this
censorship.
Unjust. He was forced to say it. That's what he said.
Well,
he said that he was pressured into saying the N-word.
Sometimes.
I deal with that pressure every day from you guys. Every day you guys are like, no, just say it. You're going to be the one who changes being a fireball.
Say it. My favorite thing is that he said it because they were talking about bad PR related to the faces of different franchises. And he was talking about, and I think he probably is still mad that he even had to get demoted for, you know, saying, oh, we're losing pizza share because of the damn kneeling black guys. And he goes, well, you know, Colonel Sanders said the N-word all the time.
Was Colonel Sanders a real person, though?
Yeah, he was.
Oh, he's an amazing character.
It's not just Norm MacDonald.
Colonel Sanders is a fascinating figure. He killed a man.
I mean, he probably killed a few men.
Well, he shot a guy.
He killed Wendy.
He shot a guy in a dispute over
chicken?
The restaurants. Yes, he had a roadside restaurant. And there was a guy who had one like down the road, and they were competitors.
What year was this?
This is like the 40s or something. And he was messing with his sign, and Colonel Sanders came out and blew him away.
I don't believe any of this.
The 40s is
true.
The 40s,
true. The 40s were awesome. If you were like a white guy who killed somebody, they'd
and you
like,
owned a chicken shop, and you could do literally whatever you wanted.
Yeah, they'd be like, all right, we're giving you the toughest sentence we give a white business owner in 1948. You have to hit a rock with a hammer for exactly 3 months. You have to wear this stripy outfit like an asshole.
I'm absolutely stunned that they haven't done a dollop about Colonel Sanders yet because it's a fascinating guy.
Well, he was given like an actual military rank in the
Kentucky does that. That Kentucky colonel is sort of
the
an
Kentucky
honorary
military?
Thing that they give
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
They gave Hunter S. Thompson one of those.
They did. There's Johnny Depp is a Kentucky colonel.
Really?
And the thing is, he wasn't from Kentucky. He's from Indiana. And he... eventually sold his name and the franchise to what became Yum Brands, but they kept him on as like a guy who would do, they would pay him to come and do little presentations at different like openings of the KFC. Here's the real Colonel Sanders, and he's wearing the white suit and he's waving at everybody. But as he got older and he kind of was losing his marbles, he would go into
KFC. As opposed to when he shot somebody.
Right. Well, no, that was just business.
Mm-hmm.
he would just wander into Kentucky Fried Chicken restaurants that he didn't own anymore and go in the back and just start like quality and control things, like sticking his hand in the mashed potato.
I mean, I do that. That's just like good, a good person.
And apparently the corporate word was just, if he comes to your store and starts banging around the base in the kitchen, just let him do it. Just let him do it, and then when he leaves, you can clean up.
That's when America was great again, when you would just get abused by elders. There was no elder abuse.
Yeah.
It's a seesaw.
I just, how many people had their childhoods marred by going to a KFC and just seeing the senile, potato-caked, just filthy Colonel Sanders swearing and dropping racial slurs?
You're at your table with your family, and you got your bucket and sides or whatever, and he just comes by, licks his finger, and sticks it in the mashed potatoes, sort of swizzles it around.
Yep.
He was the Frank Caliendo Kenny Rogers.
He was.
There was a...
Will Sasso, Kenny Rogers.
Oh,
Jerry Lewis was promoting this movie called The Nut, which is just like one of the higher concept Jerry Lewis movies where it's like, what if a guy was just kooky? And also, you know, I said it was easy to be white and kill somebody back then. It was so easy to make a movie back then because every movie cost $12,000 to make. And you just had to go into whatever producer did the most quaaludes that day and be like, what if a guy was sort of Jewish, but in a wacky way? And that was Jerry Lewis's career. But he was promoting, there was like a tie-in. It was one of the first tie-in promotions, like a KFC and the Nut promotion. And there's this famous, sort of infamous poster of Jerry Lewis and the Colonel. And Jerry Lewis is like, whoa, the Nut loves KFC. And Colonel Sanders looks like he wants to take out a fucking flintlock and blow his Jewish brains out. It's one of my favorites. Like, think how fucking pissed off Colonel Sanders was during that. Oh, my God.
All right. Well, before we get too far again into fast food franchises and their disgraced pitchmen, let's start the show. And let me introduce our guest for this week. Sitting in is Ashley Feinberg.
Hello,
Ashley. Now, if you follow Ashley on social media, and of course you do, why wouldn't you? You will know that you are one of the you when it comes to documenting the social media of the Trump family. I think you are one of our finest reporters in that regard. And I want to begin by talking about this photo of the Trump family that I saw this week, and I literally can't stop thinking about it. We're gonna make it like the episode art, so you'll know what I'm talking. There's actually two pictures of Trump that I can't stop thinking about this week, but this first one, I honestly think belongs in like the Museum of Modern Art or something,
or the Mutter Museum.
Yeah, I'm just gonna show it to you now. I'm sure you saw it this week,
probably.
But.
Oh yeah, that's a nice one. Well,
four different ways to.
Could you describe
like an
that for our
asshole?
So we have Eric, Trump Sr., Ivanka, and Don Jr. all pushing out their breasts. Like, I mean, the thing that's astounding about this is like, I don't think any of the men other than Trump actually have like man boobs, but like they stand and it looks like they're. Boobs are exactly as big as Ivanka's.
Oh, Don Jr. has an hourglass shape.
He has a very womanly figure. So does Jared, actually.
Is that Don Jr. pre-CrossFit, though?
No, that's new. This is a new picture.
I mean, his chest thing is definitely post-CrossFit, because I think he doesn't know how to handle like his new bulk.
Yeah, he...
They're slim thick, okay?
When you watch him work out, he's working out like he's trying to injure himself on purpose so he can sue CrossFit.
That is what CrossFit is. It's just injuring yourself on purpose.
Yeah.
Well, I was actually talking to someone who went to his CrossFit gym, and apparently he brings like his like 20 children with him like half the time, and they just run rampant around the CrossFit gym, like forcing people to take photos of them, and like no one really says anything because they're all kind of like scared because there's like Secret Service everywhere, but it apparently is a nightmare.
It's a safe place to bring a kid, just a place where like barely trained people are improperly lifting and dropping hundreds of pounds.
I mean, he has enough kids.
Head.
He can make a new one.
Yeah, he could lose a few.
What I find so uncanny about that photo is that all four of them are standing in ways that are different. They each have an individual standing technique that is just so uncanny and inhuman at the same, like they're arms are out in a weird area. It reminds me of like in Hanna-Barbera cartoons when a character would run, but they would have their arms perfectly straight down their sides.
I mean, Don Jr. looks like he like got polio at like a young age and recovered super quickly, but like he still like isn't like totally confident in like being able to like balance well. But I mean, Eric's normally better. That photo is an anomaly for Eric.
There's just like Don Sr. Which, like, I always wondered about that, if he knew he would be referred to as Don Sr. when he named his kid Don Jr.
He said he didn't want to. He said he hates it.
This is one of the worst deals I've ever made. But, he always stands like he has, like, dysphoria, but for thinking he's a minotaur.
That's actually
like,
a great
always, like, juts out his ass.
Forward. Yeah. Yeah.
He's like, do you think you can get through my maze? Bad chance. No one has. You lose again.
Okay. The next one, again, just very, for some reason, I can't stop thinking about this ever since I saw it. This is a photo that came this week from Trump's now sort of disastrous trip to the UK, which I want to talk about
in a
second.
Who would have thought that wouldn't have gone well?
But this is a photo of Trump sitting in Winston Churchill's chair. Mm. And here, Ashley, I'm just going to show that to you again. Yeah. Could you describe it?
Trump is doing a very classic Winston Churchill pose. He has cuffed his pant legs, which I've never seen him do. And I've thought about that a lot, actually, over the past few days. Who did he ask to do that? Because he can't bend down that far. And how long did it stay cuffed?
How funny would that be if he got it was like Steve Mnuchin or someone?
I mean,
had
who
to
else
would
he ask besides Steve Mnuchin?
Yeah.
So he's reclining in this old leather chair, and he's sitting back way very far back, and has his legs crossed in sort of a provocative pose, and he has his hand sort of perched atop his knee into kind of like the I don't know. Sex touch that you would do to
the classic
someone
knee
sitting
sex
next
touch.
To you. Yeah,
he's casting couch. He's casting couching himself.
Yeah, he's gonna meet to himself for sympathy in a few months. Yeah.
I think someone pointed this out. Like, I think someone gave him a book or a seminar on all of the ways that you can sit or stand when you're fat in a way that doesn't make you appear fat.
Yeah.
And I think that's what he's doing here. He's like very, very high cross to sort of cover his girth.
Yeah.
Sitting down.
Yeah, yeah. The leg is there to obscure the gut.
And the exposed
sure.
ankle is slimming.
If he didn't have such like a stupid brain where he's like, the suit is the symbol of business and had to like wear one all the time, he would just be a caftan guy.
He would.
Yeah.
He'd be like Homer.
Yeah.
He would wear a judicial robe.
This is terrible, but I was thinking about this the other day, and I was wondering, like, is he ever, like, when he's playing golf is the only time he's not in a suit.
Yeah.
And, like, my brain was like, well, what does he dress like when he's just around the house? And then I started thinking, like, well, he has to shower. And then I started thinking about him naked.
I think about that all the time. No,
but then, like, getting
naked.
Out of the shower, I just imagine him, like, going to the shower, closing the door, and then coming out in a suit. Like he dries off and then just puts on a suit. And he's like,
he
ready
showers
to go.
In a suit.
Yeah.
Imagine his hair is sopping wet because it's got to be at least like 10 inches long. Like yeah. I think about that constantly.
Yeah, I think about the sideburn hair. I think about the sideburn hair just lying, like dangling, like these awful like neon orange payas on the side of his temples.
I don't think it's like low then comes up. I think it's like his hair is like suicide doors.
Yeah. So what they're like the strands are like coming from the top of his head.
Well, the back is completely bald.
Yeah. That's where they got to spackle it all up.
He was so cool.
He is so cool.
That UK trip, it's like James Bond. I know who should play him next. Like
the entire time he was like Steve Mnuchin, who like all he will humiliate himself just to protect like bonds and like monetary options and shit. And he had to be, don't talk about Brexit. Don't do it. Yeah. Don't do it. He's like, got it. And then the second he gets over there, he's like, Theresa May honestly looks terrible. She wants to put everyone in a burqa. Yeah, she should be wearing one. Anyway, she's screwing up this deal. And Jimmy Savile would be a wonderful PM. Just terrific.
Brexit is Brexit, folks. Okay. That's all there is to it. That was his big insight when they asked them about it.
My favorite was his meeting the Queen. And I got to say...
Classic Frank Drebin scene from Naked Gun.
How genuinely angry and disgusted the Queen of England must be to be
good,
around him.
Fuck her.
Is the only good thing...
I hope that's the last thing she fucking remembers before she finally dies.
She's never going
to
die.
It must have been really weird for the Queen to meet like a stupid, spoiled, rich guy who flew on Jeffrey Epstein's plane. She was like a totally new experience for her. The Queen of England has probably never met someone so racist.
She has met more chomos than Chris Hansen.
that was incredible. The scene of them walking together was great. But now, it's like, obviously, like, Trump's social media presence is well known. But Ashley, I want to talk to you about Don Jr.'s social media.
Don
Jr. is sort of like one of your favorite characters,
right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's like... the extent to which all of them are like complete idiots is like astounding, and to be with like without question the dumbest one of all of them is like an
astounding.
It's incredible. How I've never seen anything like it.
How are you dumber than Eric?
Or Ivanka. Ivanka's like a fucking idiot.
Ivanka's an idiot, but like Eric looks like a late Habsburg prince. He's got the jaw, he's got like the weird
gums.
Yeah, the huge
butthead face.
The butthead face, the constant sort of like he's trying to think of a math problem. Eric just looks like a dullard, and yet somehow John Jr. is dumber than him.
Because Eric knows enough not to like say shit out loud.
Yeah.
Yeah. Eric, like, I mean, Eric's mouth looks like one of those 70s desserts where it's like, put chiclets in a thing of Jell-O. And, but yeah, it just, he fooled everyone by just looking the absolute dumbest. But, you know, Don, he probably has like purchased Kevin Rudolph singles on iTunes.
His mom and his dad were both unquestionably doing like a shit ton of drugs when they had him. Not that they weren't with ones, but like I'm sure they were more haphazard with first one.
Don Jr. has every Kevin Trudeau mega memory book in that's his library. It's just every one of those.
Don is the kind of rich, the kind of dumb guy who thinks he's a smart guy.
Oh yeah,
he thinks he's a sly business magnate like his father.
Because he reads Ben Shapiro,
and he also emulates his father. And his only real desire that's expressed constantly is for his father's affection. Which makes it so funny that he's the one singled out as the one his father who hates the most.
His mother was Ivanka?
Ivana.
Ivana. I mean,
no, his sister was his mom. Yeah. His sister was his mom.
She's my daughter. She's my sister. She's my.
I made a great deal, folks. I reduced redundancies in my family by making my daughter one of the mothers of my children. Another deal of one.
Do you remember reading the story? I think it was in Ivana's memoir about how she tried to like use Don Jr. As like a sort of custody chip and sort of going all in. To be like, I want 100% full custody of Don Jr. And Trump was like, okay, sure. And then she was like,
I don't want to
drop that.
Don send someone. Don send someone.
My bluff.
Don Sr. takes someone to take custody of Don Jr., of a child Don Jr. And then after a few hours goes, no, fuck this.
She was like, take him, fine. You can have him. And Don was like, oh, fuck that. I don't want him. Well, and send him back in a limo.
Don Jr. is interesting because in some respects, he is Superman on Krypton. Which is to say, he's as dumb as his dad, but his dad has a superpower. He has the most amazing personality type on Earth, which is that it's like nearly impossible for him to feel embarrassed.
Yeah.
Like he looks like shit all the time. He's wearing like these, like his pants look like Zumbas. They're so big on him to hide his like weird body.
And the zipper's like 2 feet long. Have you ever like?
Yeah. Yeah. The longest zipper in history. Every day there's like a news report that's like, all of this guy's closest friends say he's the dumbest piece of shit alive. And he's like, that's made up. He's doing a good job. And there's just like, everyone sees him look like shit all the time, act like a fucking idiot. He's like, I'm so good at this. Everyone is jealous of me. And his son, like, can only feel shame.
Yeah.
His son got all the shame he never felt.
Well, that's true.
Because Don Jr. believes his dad when he's... says everyone loves him and he's brilliant. Like, he has no reason to question that because he doesn't have the capacity to like understand that they're
very childlike.
Yeah.
Well, he hated his father for a while, according to his classmates at the University of Pennsylvania, where he was nicknamed Diaper Don because he would piss himself after he got drunk all the time. And he would find him literally pass out in the bushes in front of the dorms. Is that he hated his dad in college, which, I mean, what? Really? Hate this just monstrous sociopath?
Well, there was like one story where like his dad was like taking him to some baseball game and he like came to his dorm room and Don Jr. like came out all like stoked and like grinning in like a Yankees uniform. And according to like Don Jr.'s college friend, he said that Trump like punched him in the face, told him to like put a suit on and that he was going to go wait in the car. And like multiple people have said they like saw this, but I mean, it explains a lot.
I mean, that's one of those, it's like Trump and Stormy Daniels, right? Like, it's like, I believe he's like, morally would do that, but it's like, I can't picture Donald Trump having sex. I, like, can't picture him, like, punching
I can picture
someone.
Him slapping his...
Slapping. Yeah.
Like a very weak...
yeah, he's never thrown a punch in his life.
Yeah. Same thing in Donald.
But I love that story, though, because it just, there's so much going on. Like, the punch takes, like, mutes everything else in the background. But it's like The Sopranos. You rewatch it and realize new things. Like, you have to wear a suit to the baseball game. Like, that's the type of dumb guy Donald Trump is, where he's like, the first rule of respect is style. You just has to, you, if you're going out to eat, wear a tuxedo. I don't care where it is.
Yeah, it's like the tragedy of Don Jr. is that it's he hated his, from all accounts, he hated his dad for good reason in college. And he probably had some fantasy that he was going to be able to break away from his control and become his own man and not have to deal with him. And then he realized at some point, oh no, I'm a fucking moron. I can only exist as a remora fish suckling off of this corrupt empire. And he had to stuff all of that resentment down and just become his.
And then he bought like his, 8 pinstripe suits and was ready to roll.
It's like, that is brutal.
Well,
you catalog a lot of like very depressing Don Jr. Instagram. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I want to talk about
that. There's no other kind.
And yeah. I think it's interesting. He always uses the cry laughing emoji.
He fucking loves that cry laughing emoji.
But it's a tell.
Yeah, it is.
It's just like, I'm having such a good time.
These are tears of laughter. These are tears of laughter. I'm laughing. That's why I'm crying.
Oh, man. It's brutal. It's fucking brutal. That thing where it's like he... In the story, it's like he wore a Yankees jersey, but Don Jr. probably wore like a full Yankees uniform.
Oh, yeah.
With like socks up to his knees. He probably looked like an asshole. He somehow...
The baseball full kit wanker, yeah.
Because of like some genetic disease, he probably got knocked out in one blow by his dad's glove. And it's just like the most formative moment of his life. And it just cry laughing emoji ever since.
Yeah. Well, speaking of cry laughing, one of my favorite through lines in the Don Jr. Instagram saga is his ongoing divorce and now relationship with Kimberly Guilfoyle of Fox News.
Gavin Newsom's ex-wife. Yeah. What the fuck?
Bizarre. Going back to our last week's theme of the show, the disgusting, incestuous, eyes wide shut like relationship between every rich person in America.
Gavin Newsom has piped the whole squad. Like, Gavin Newsom is the fucking Drake of Democratic politics. He's fucked everybody. Gavin Newsom probably fucked Jerry Brown and like forgot about it. He's like, whoops.
Actually, one of my favorite things in your coverage of Don Jr.'s Instagram, is this sort of like divorce guy motifs that he keeps coming up with? The divorce guy bracelet. Like, I remember he had a Zippo lighter with like a Punisher skull on it.
He's super into skulls. He loves that shit.
100% freaking awesome, my man.
What are some other favorite like Don Jr. divorce guy material?
I mean, well, the thing that like baffles me most about him is he has not followed any like Instagram porn accounts or Instagram models, but like he only follows like giant skull rings, like guns, lighters. There was like one Instagram where he was like, look at me like making a fire, and like he like clearly like forced someone to like film him for at least 5 minutes like building this fire. But if you look in the back, you can see that there's like two other guys around an identically like composed like fire pit, and he's like clearly at some like learn how to camp training thing, and it's so depressing.
Well, you know, he's got to train for being outdoors, because he's got to get out all of that aggression against his father on Endangered Species. That's the only way he could feel anything.
Here's my favorite story.
Imagining that when he blows an elephant's brains out, it's Don Sr.
Yeah, that elephant, like, it's like Big Pussy is the fish in season 2. It's like that elephant, like, turns to him. And it sort of has, like, Don Sr.'s facial composure almost. And it's like, you know, I came up with the idea for roller rinks. No one gives me credit. Blam!
Actually, were you the one who broke the story of you found Don Jr.'s accounts on hunting message boards?
Oh, yeah.
That
oh
was so funny to me, because even on these message boards, people were like, you're fucking stupid. What the fuck are you talking about?
What were his comments on hunting message boards?
I mean, a lot of it was just like boring like hunting shit and him asking to buy everyone's guns, but also like he would post on like people would like post stories about like how this like one kid finally like stuck it to this liberal bully and like punched him in the face, and how kids are getting too fat, and like just like these like stupid like bullshit stories he like tweets about now, but like back then he was just I guess testing out his material on his hunting buddies.
That's great. I like Don Jr.'s Instagram posts where he have like his workouts and stuff, and they'll show his incredibly like, you know, wet face, and it'll be like hot CrossFit, 120 degrees, like, you know, gotta grind hard every morning, shit like that.
Which it, like it is CrossFit is sort of the perfect thing for him, because it's like he thinks because it's hard, it's the best, like, just because it's the most difficult and cumbersome, it's the best workout.
Yeah.
Like, it is the top stupid guy workout.
Yeah.
Well, they all hate him.
Man, I had a great workout today. Shredded both of my ACLs. That's how you know it worked.
Yeah, I have a kidney failure. Like, you should, like, yeah. He
I detached
like,
my retinas.
He was bragging about working out in, like, a very hot gym. That's, like, any actual professional athlete. Like, Jordan Burroughs, famously, he's a American Olympic wrestler, one of the best of this generation. And he famously, like, changed the way a lot of people cut weight because he's like, no, it's like stupid to like put on sweats and work out in a hot room. Like, you're going to kill yourself.
Yeah.
Just do it gradually. And people are, because wrestlers are all like very hardworking, sort of oafish, but dedicated guys, like, oh, damn. Thanks, dude. But the CrossFit guys are just like 30 years behind. No. And they're like,
I'm going to,
if it almost
my
kills
brain
you, it's great.
Until yeah. I have brain damage. That is what yeah. I'm doing. I want to put my head in a microwave.
Yeah,
that means I
committed. I'm committed to it.
So, moving on from the Trump family and all of their wonderful ways of standing, sitting, and just being
shuffling around.
They're human doings, as we mentioned before.
They're, human. I need evidence, honestly, because they really do often seem to be creatures wearing human skins.
Well, they look like they're in physical pain in their bodies. It's like how they're standing. Like they, Don Jr. looks like he is. His entire body is on fire when he's like sitting or like standing. Like, oh, he like wants God. To like remove his skin from himself.
Okay. That, I mean, that famous picture of him on the log.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That
it's a stump.
Really
it's a stump. Let's not change history.
Oh, yeah. You're right. It looks like he's losing his balance, but like the thing he's trying to balance on is like just the earth.
They've all got Hohenzollern bone deficiency.
I always think about this. It's our friend Michael, who we've brought up a lot. Found the greatest Facebook post he ever found, which is a picture of a guy crying in a car that he posted himself, and it's, don't let the tears fool you, I'll still knock the fuck out of somebody. And that's so Don Jr.
Oh yeah,
that's him, that's his essence. Like, yeah. Don't let the tears fool you, that yeah. is, he is that guy, that's his soul.
Yeah.
Real quick before we move on, speaking of incredibly wet faces, I know you guys also saw the Jonathan Shade
yeah.
tweet the other day.
Yes.
Just like the most close-up shot imaginable.
No one needed
of his
to see
just
that.
Glistening.
I want
to
know how
face.
Many he took before he posted the one he posted, because there's no way that was his first try.
Got to hit those angles, snapping like you Fabo.
His lashes looked fantastic. He has beautiful eyelashes.
Yeah,
they were wonderful. Very plump.
I was
yeah.
very surprised.
What if it was a viral marketing post with like like
Maybelline?
I think he's like working with Rihanna's beauty line.
Oh, Fenty Beauty?
Yeah, he's yeah, yeah. Fenty Beauty ex Jonathan Shade. I love this guy.
Yeah,
he did. Yeah, but he got cut about the elbow because he was doing and one moves, and a guy in a full like Kobe outfit, not just the jersey, just fucking sliced him.
Well, yeah, it looked like a paper cut. Like, I didn't like. I thought.
He was asking if he should go to the emergency.
I thought it was a joke at first.
Yeah.
Did he ever say what caused it?
He's like an elbow.
He was playing hoops.
He was playing outdoor summer hoops. Matt, come on.
He said at least three times it was a hoops injury.
Yeah, sure it was. I think that he was cut by some indecorous discourse.
He was cut when the guy he was guarding crossed him over and a McDouble fell out of his pants. And he slipped on it and cut his eye.
It sort of like douched me out because it reminded me of something I did when I was like younger. Really anything I make fun of I've done, but like when I first started training, like when I did jiu-jitsu, I'd like get my nose fucked up a lot, and I would just like loudly complain about it, so like girls would think I was like tough and cool. I'd be like, oh, my nose is fucked up again, want to know how I got that? Like, no.
You want to know
no,
how
I
still, got this
no,
nose?
No, I still like hate how you look and your personality. Well, I actually got it in jiu-jitsu, just like not even listening. And that's like late in life athlete, like milking an injury. I can't really make fun of him because it's like, I've been there, man.
I mean, I would have respected him so much more if he had not deleted the BOFA tweet.
That's true.
Like Josh TPM fucking like owned his
Angela and Strawberry
tweet. Like,
and the Chicks of Pussy.
I can never completely dislike him now because he has still not deleted that tweet.
We were at like this big party watching the UFC when the Ashley, you were the first person I showed. I was like,
I've never been more happy in my life until Jonathan Shade tweeted what is BOFA. But before that.
Okay, so moving on to an actual news story from this week. I guess the big thing this week is Trump's Supreme Court pick.
Mm-hmm.
Brett Kavanaugh. And I want to talk a little bit about this guy. Not
Brett
so much
Kavercheck.
I don't care about him personally. And like, honestly, every time there's a Supreme Court nomination, it's like my least favorite style of news cycle because it's just all so rote and like the same thing happens. And like mainly what I hate about it is that we all have to play that, like, or everyone in the media and the Democrats and the Republicans all play this game of make-believe where, like, they all pretend that they're considering the nominee and that they always talk about whoever it is as this sort of, like, they're intellectually voracious and just over above everything, they just love the law.
Yeah.
They love the law more than anything. They love debating the law, writing about the law. And it's this, like, whole kabuki theater where we have to pretend that we don't know exactly, especially if it's, like, a right-wing guy from the Federalist Society, like Brett Kavanaugh. We all have to pretend we don't know exactly why he's being nominated and exactly what he's going to do on the Supreme Court. Yeah. You know, I will keep an open mind. I will respect precedent. And
we'll see what he says. We'll see how he answers my questions during the committee hearing.
And I just, like, it really doesn't matter. I hate it so much, and I'll tell you exactly why it doesn't matter. I want to talk a little bit about, this is a piece that was in the Daily Beast this week. It was a very good piece by Jay Michelson about this guy named Leonard Leo, who is like the capo of Supreme Court appointments for the right. He's this Federalist Society goon, and I just want to talk a little bit about this guy in light of the Kavanaugh nomination. Reading from this piece, Jay Michelson writes here, at the center of the network is Leonard Leo of the Federalist Society, the association of legal professionals that has been the pipeline for nearly all of Trump's judicial nominees. Leo is on leave from the Federalist Society to personally assist Trump in picking a replacement for Justice Anthony Kennedy. His formal title is executive vice president, but that role belies Leo's influence. Directly or through surrogates, he has placed dozens of life tenure judges on the federal bench, effectively controls the Judicial Crisis Network, which led the opposition to President Obama's nominee, Judge Merrick Garland. He heavily influences the Beckett Fund law firm that represented Hobby Lobby in its successful challenge of contraception, and now supervises admissions and hires at the George Mason Law School, newly renamed in memory of Justice Antonin Scalia. Leonard Leo was a visionary, so this is really important. Leonard Leo was a visionary, said Tom Carter, who served on Leo's media relations director when he was chairman of the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom. In an exclusive interview, he says, he figured out 20 years ago that the conservatives had lost the culture war. Abortion, gay rights, contraception. Conservatives didn't have a chance if public opinion prevailed, so they needed to stack the courts. And that's exactly what he's been doing with great success. It goes on to talk about he was responsible for the picks of Alito, Gorsuch, and now Kavanaugh, and Roberts, too. And they all share with him a arch-Catholic fundamentalism. This guy's a member of the Knights of Malta.
Oh, boy.
And it says here, Leonard's faith is paramount to him, Carter said. When he traveled, staff members had to find a church near wherever he was staying so he could attend Mass every day. Again, this is why it doesn't matter. This is why everything you read about Brett Kavanaugh doesn't matter. This is the only thing that should be discussed in this context, in that he is another right-wing religious fundamentalist who is being put on the court to roll back the last 50 or 60, if not 100 years.
Wait, Brett Kavanaugh went to the Mass every day?
No, this was Leonard Leo. But Brett Kavanaugh, as we're about to find out, is also a very religious Catholic.
But how
as
is
well.
He in a carpool?
We're going to get there. But I just think, like, this is the context with which this nomination or any nomination by a Republican president should be viewed, as part of a highly organized and disciplined and ruthless and in a way almost admirable, if they weren't so evil, attempts to stack the courts with people who are reliable ideologues who will vote to overturn Roe v. Wade, to overturn the right to privacy, which undergirds the right to abortion and contraception, to overturn every labor law. And basically, as I described it earlier this week, if you have a right that you think is foundational to your dignity and existence as a human being, get ready to have it given to either a private corporation or a religious authority, because it's not going to be yours anymore. It's going to be theirs. That being said, everything I read other than this week about Kavanaugh was about what a great guy he is.
Yeah.
Have you guys been up on that?
He's a good dude. Everyone who's asshole kid got a clerkship from him says he's wonderful.
Yeah, everyone at the Raytheon Acres Bridge Game League
where they do the bridge tournament. They say he's great. And that's not good enough for 300, 400, however many people live in this country. I'm trying to figure it out. that's not good enough for them. Then we should just not have a Supreme Court. Is that what you want?
Yeah, really. Do you not want 9 fossilized psychopaths determining whether you live or die? Is that the world you want to live in?
And Brett Kavanaugh's young. He's going to be there for a while.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Maybe we can get him to start doing CrossFit. Not
I mean, I obviously oppose, his you know, ideas, but he is the Supreme Court Justice to most look like Steve Little from Eastbound and Down. So he's got that going for him.
And also, it's interesting, like, the New York Times had a piece, the liberal case for Kavanaugh, and it just
posted that shit 2 minutes after the announcement.
Exactly.
Which means that everyone on that short list, they had a fucking pre-written, this guy's actually great article by some liberal who is somehow incestuously related to them. Either they're fucking at school, or their stupid kid is their clerk, some way that they're connected to them, where that person being on the Supreme Court raises their status. That's why they think this guy is so great, is because him being on the Supreme Court reflects well on them or their family.
Here's a perfect example of that. In the Wall Street Journal, Kavanaugh is a mentor to women. This is by Amy Chow, the Tiger Mom.
Oh, God.
Right. Tiger Mom, for those of you who don't remember, it's a book about being a furry parent.
a series of identical articles, and I'm going to share a couple of them, all sketch out this idea that where they basically say, I don't know how he's going to rule in the court, nor do I care.
You know,
but you know what? He's a wonderful man, and he's like a role model to young women. Again, like, and this is all very calculated, because the main issue with this is that they're finally going to have a majority to overturn Roe v. Wade,
yeah,
which I fully expect them to do. So they want, and they want you to talk about anything other than that. And the way they're going to do it is by appealing to, you know, liberal sensibilities about what a good guy he is, and, you know, how he believes that, like, you know, he want women in the workplace or whatever. I just want to read here from Amy. She writes, Judge Brett Kavanaugh's jurisprudence will appropriately be discussed in the months ahead. I'd like to speak to a less well-known side of the Supreme Court nominee. His role as a mentor for young lawyers, particularly women. The qualities he exhibits with his clerks may provide important evidence about the kind of justice he would be. I've gotten to know this side of Judge Kavanaugh while serving on Yale Law School's Clerkships Committee for the most of the past 10 years. It also affects me personally. Last year, my daughter accepted an appellate clerkship from Judge Kavanaugh, which is set to begin next month.
Wow.
In addition,
there's no man that has been as good a mentor to young women since Charles Manson.
You know, on one hand, like, the fate of hundreds of millions of women and reproductive rights. On the other hand, someone is going to enable your daughter to become as repulsive a human being as you. So, like, who really wins here?
I think it's interesting that it is the Tiger Mom. She became famous because she wrote a book about how to, like, psychopathically abuse your children so that they can play the violin real good.
Yeah.
But her most recent book is about how tribalism is tearing America apart.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting here that she's just like, Brett Kavanaugh, what do I know about him? I don't know. He gave my daughter a job, so I'm going to do this big puff piece on him in the Wall Street Journal.
Well, that does tell you what they mean. What she and other people mean by tribalism is people having any kind of ideological commitments, because it's just a big, the world is a big country club. It's a big network of glad handing and mutual back patting and back scratching. And anybody who wants to disrupt that is being tribal.
I mean, her big endorsement of Kavanaugh is that she wasn't worried that he was fucking her daughter, which is like not like a,
yeah,
not like a, like a big
yeah, this is at the end. It says, these days the press is full of stories about powerful men exploiting or abusing female employees. That makes it even more striking to hear Judge Kavanaugh's female clerk speak of his decency and his role as a fierce champion of their careers. If the judge is confirmed, my daughter will probably be looking for a different clerkship. But for my own daughter, there is no judge I would trust more than Brett Kavanaugh to be, in one former clerk's words, a teacher, advocate, and friend. It's good that Tiger Mom here is very concerned about powerful men exploiting or abusing their employees, which Brett Kavanaugh will make officially legal to do.
Yeah.
Sorry, ladies,
you have no right to redress against the sexual harassment in the workplace. But yeah, no, of course he's not going to fucking do sexual harassment on anybody. It's hard to do that when you wrapped your dick in horse hair and fucking
barbed wire
because you're an arch Catholic psychopath because you're the fucking albino monk from the Da Vinci Code.
Well, so Silas. I feel like I'm in trouble saying this, but so on Facebook, someone posted something. Someone sent this to me. They like blacked out the name, but someone posted on Facebook that anyone who went to Georgetown Law School in 2010 would have been very surprised to learn he was married. And really? Like, I mean, that could mean 1 million different things, but like, I mean, who knows?
Maybe it means he played Uno with his friends real late at night. It's like, whoa, buddy, don't you have a
married
wife
people
to go
fucking
home
hate
to?
Uno. It's true. Yeah.
Again, I mean, like, I just go back to that line about the Leonard Leo guy and this like incredibly well-funded by dark money, like right-wing groups that are just like plotting to, they understand that they are a moral minority that wishes to exercise a veto power over everyone else in this country. They know they can't win politically, so they love the Supreme Court because it's a lifetime tenure with which they can, you know, like their claw-like hold over, you know, law and authority in this country. And that largely why the Supreme Court should be abolished. But just keep that in mind. These people understand they're a moral minority, but they have no problem lording undemocratic power over the rest of the country. Next article. This is the worst one. This was in the Washington Post, and it's almost identical to the one that appeared in the Wall Street Journal. I don't know Kavanaugh the judge, but Kavanaugh the carpool dad is one great guy.
Yes, give it to me.
I am so sick of hearing about these people's fucking lives.
No, it's important because as part of the job of the most, because you know they say that the most junior Supreme Court justice, he has to close the door
and pick up everybody's children
and get coffee and pick up everyone in America's kids. So I need to know how he is as a carpool dad.
This is by Julie O'Brien in the Washington Post, and the article begins with like a little like, just lets you know, Julie O'Brien lives in Chevy Chase. If you don't know, Chevy Chase, Maryland is probably one of the most evil zip codes of this country. It's where literally all of the neocon Iraq war architects live on like the same block.
And it's also where Chevy Chase is.
If like I had to pick any place in America that has a Yellow King ceremony, it's Chevy Chase. There is just such a dark energy you go there.
Yeah, everybody lives there in their fucking closet. They've got an unexplained black robe.
Well, Kavanaugh will have an explanation for his. Okay, so
I wore the ceremony robe to work again. How embarrassing.
Okay, so this begins. Julie O'Brien begins here. Much has been written about Brett Kavanaugh as President Trump's nominee for the Supreme Court.
But
That's the exact same fucking lead. Why do they do it?
Suckers. No, I don't think it's a stretch to think that like these people are just given like, you know, forms by this weird Leonard Leo.
Those
like
bad vibes, like in today's society.
Webster's defined justice as.
I don't even think it's that. I just don't think these people like try that hard. Yeah. I know. I think it's like for them, it's ridiculous to think that like anyone would not like the guy from their carpool or who gave their friend a job. So they're like, well, you know, there are many judges in America.
I mean, all they need is like a public endorsement of this future Supreme Court justice to have his ear, like when he becomes a justice.
So she writes, much has been written about, but the discussion has focused on his record as a federal judge and his legal career. Gee, that's wonder why. Yeah, I'd like to talk about him as Coach K. Like the one at Duke University, this Coach K is also a mentor to student athletes who love basketball.
And is a repellent, chitinous scumbag like Coach K.
But his players are sixth grade girls. Cool. Brett's older daughter and mine have been classmates at Blessed Sacrament School, a small Catholic school in the district, for the past 7 years. On evenings and weekends, you're likely to find Brett at a local gym or athletic field, encouraging his players or watching games with his daughters and their friends. He coaches not one but two girls' basketball teams.
Oh, who gives a shit?
His positive attitude.
Are they winning, though? Are they good teams?
Yeah, what's the record?
His positive attitude and calm demeanor make the game fun and allow each player to shine. So? The results have been good. This past season, he led the Blessed Sacrament School's sixth grade girls team to an undefeated season and a citywide championship in the local Catholic Youth League. To the parents with players on the squad, it's no surprise that the team photograph with the trophy is displayed prominently in his chambers, right next to a photo of him shaking hands and grinning with like Pinochet or you know, Father Maciel or the, you know, the Opus Dei founder who had like six kids that he molested.
Yeah.
I got to say, it's not really germane to this article or Kavanaugh himself, but like, can the Catholics fucking calm down with what they name their schools? Every fucking school. This is Bloody Nail Sacrament.
I mean, that's only
school.
Good part of Catholicism. Like, that's everything.
That's metal, man.
Yeah,
come on.
The rules.
I think they need to cool it.
What? Wow, you prefer, you know.
It's too violent.
You like the Protestant names that are like Friendly Hands.
Yeah, exactly.
That's awesome. You don't want to go to school and have a positive attitude.
Yeah, it's like Heavenly Gate LLC, a religious corporation.
It's just like, yeah, of course your kids are going to grow up to be like ambitious judicial freaks if like it's like Eternal Bloody Destiny Lower School. Like, come on, man.
Brett's contribution to our school's community extends beyond the sidelines. He and his wife, Ashley, support their two daughters and other
That's
children.
Wow.
I should disclose that.
Whoops.
They support their children at countless school and church functions throughout the year.
I bet you could count them.
In the summer, Brett is the carpool dad, often shuttling students to and from practices, games, and activities.
Wait, how many activities are there in there during the summer?
Doesn't this guy fucking judge?
I didn't
Jesus
realize
Christ.
This was like a...
Get back to work, you fucking asshole.
Yeah, you're not a chauffeur.
You're like competitive Stations of the Cross.
It's called Lyft.
It's also like, I like how this is like a reason why he'd be a good judge is like, he helps his daughters fucking do whatever. You know,
he knows how to drive.
He fucking raises his kids.
Can I get a little spicy here? I think all the stuff about... that he coaches two, you know, sixth grade girls basketball teams. I think this is all coded message. This is all like code to the people who are like in the sect. They're like, what they're saying is, folks, he's really dedicated to disciplining and policing the bodies of young women.
I'm sorry. Tell them what to do.
I gotta say, I don't think if you're an adult man, you should be coaching sixth grade girls teams.
Yeah, Catholics can't coach basketball teams anyway because they can't tell the girls to run suicide.
Brett is a steady presence at his daughter's events, even if it means racing across town just to catch the last 15 minutes of a game or program.
15 minutes isn't enough to... That does not count and is a mark for Brett.
No, that's a half-assed.
Here he goes. Brett's friendship and mentorship have touched my family in an especially personal way. Mm. A few years ago, my husband died. One of the many difficult aspects of... one of the many difficult aspects of that loss was that my daughter had no one to accompany her to the school's annual father-daughter dance. That first year and every year since my husband's passing, Brett has stepped forward to take my daughter to the dance alongside his own. So he's taking someone else's daughter to the father-daughter.
Brett gave my daughter her first chastity doll.
My dad died, and I can just say that the last thing I would ever want is for literally anyone else to take me to one of those father-daughter dances, and I would feel way too uncomfortable to say no. So this seems like a cruel thing to do more than anything.
I mean, my dad died when I was 21, and Brett Kavanaugh still took me to the dance. It's kind of weird. I was like, I'm not even a girl, dude.
There's
like,
no
way
dance.
Too old for this, also.
I mean, it was heartwarming, you know, to see them, you know, step out on the dance floor that first time for that special dance to the song from Eyes Wide Shut that they play. That's the backwards chanting during the sex ritual.
That's only endearing if he goes to the dance wearing his judicial robes, holding a gavel, and he says things like "motion for punch."
Wait, did that say there were father-daughter dances every year?
Yeah.
To what age?
38.
Until you get married.
Yeah. Are fucked up.
Until you get married.
Yeah.
That's like, Catholics have to relocate. I'm now becoming a Zionist for Catholics because it's like, I was against them at the start of the segment, but now I realize they've been infected by Protestantism.
Oh, it's true.
Protestant junk.
No, it's true.
They need to get out of America.
Absolutely.
This doesn't happen in the Vatican because it's Italy and they don't acknowledge their daughters.
That's true.
Don't clip that. I'm just giving you history. That's not offensive.
This T-Pain song overruled.
Oh, man.
So, yeah.
That is delightful, Virgil. I love it.
It just finishes up here. I'll leave it to others to gauge Judge Kavanaugh's qualifications.
Why are you fucking writing this? Yeah. Like...
I'll leave it for others to judge his actual qualifications. But he says, but as someone who would bring to his work the traits of personal kindness, leadership, and willingness to help when called on him, he would receive a unanimous verdict in his favor from those who know him. Again, like, all this shit, like, it literally doesn't matter if he's a good guy or not. All that's important is how he will rule and as part of the Supreme Court, which we know. We go back. The guy who put him on the court is a member of the Knights of fucking Malta.
This is, all of this is coded. It's for gullible liberals who do read the Wall Street Journal op-eds. And to tell them, look, there's no way he's going to overturn Roe v. Wade. He coaches a girls' basketball team.
Yeah, no, that is, I mean, that is the all of these are geared towards professional liberalism.
And you're right, it is they're obviously coordinated.
They're there to soften opposition among liberals, among people who already have soft enough heads to begin with, and they just soften them a little more because there's nothing they like more than to imagine their leaders as regular people and evaluate them as such, and just think of them in terms of just these replaceable cogs in a political machine that is determined by, you know, the interests of the parties, but as free individuals who rule and vote based on their inner character. Mm-hmm. And if you can just divine that, then you'll know how they're going to rule and how they're going to vote.
No, we know how they're going to vote because we know how Opus Dei feels about women, sexual and religious minorities, the 20th century, Vatican II.
Labor control. Lochner era psychos.
And if it does not overturn Roe v. Wade, he'll run out of girls to coach.
One of those memes that's like aborted basketball player.
You know, she could have given you 20 points a game. I could have won the city championships.
I could have led the league in assists against Blessed Virgin summer day camp.
Yeah, I mean, again, you know, we say it all the time, but this is why, you know, Donald Trump's such a good president. Because there are literally no stories of him being nice to his kids anyone, and he just won on his own merits.
Imagine someone trying to write a story like this about Donald Trump.
Oh, there's a lot of stories of him being super nice to Ivanka.
Oh, yeah. That's true. Yeah.
Well, you mentioned.
I had a really bad one. I'm not even going to say it.
Say it.
Donald Trump is such a dedicated father. He started a homeschool wrestling league with Ivanka.
No,
you're cutting that, dude. You're
that's
fucking
fine.
Cutting that
that's
shit.
You know you're on camera.
It's not.
Oh, whoops. Damn, don't clip that. I fucked up. Damn. They always have a way to trick you.
You know, like you were talking about the Federalist Societies, this conservative legal group, and how profoundly successful they've been getting their nominees through two, you know, rather different Republican presidents, and just the sheer amount of power and dedication they have within that party.
And it's not just the Supreme Court; it's like every federal court, and like the Federalist Society exists, like basically to just groom the next generation of black-eyed psychopaths to, like, you know, eviscerate
that
our
is
civil
that
rights.
Is probably the greatest power within the Republican coalition right now.
Yeah.
And
oh,
I know obviously there are liberal legal groups and societies, but they obviously can't exert that level of devotion or influence in the Democratic Party, because if they could, they would have never gotten Elena Kagan on the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
Sotomayor, yeah, sure, but
here's the other thing, like, and again, I have to say I almost admire it despite how evil it is the fact that they're not afraid at all of the fact that, like I said, that they're a moral minority that wishes to use power to inflict their vision of the world on everyone else. I got to say, like, that's kind of the point of politics at a certain level.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to admire them if they weren't all so evil and should be, like,
well,
I said,
having a zillion dollars to do it really helps.
In the Daily Beast article, it does it by the end of it. It's a very good article. I recommend you read the whole thing. But it does talk about how it's very hard to say who funds all of this, but we know for sure that the Koch brothers and the Mercers.
Yeah.
Speaking of, like, back to, like, the fact that, like, just suspiciously all these articles are ready to go, like, literally the minute Kavanaugh's name was announced. Here's what I was wondering. Remember when Obama got Kagan and Sotomayor? Do you remember reading in any venue the conservative case for Sotomayor?
No. I just that she was a dumb bitch. That's all.
Yeah,
I
mean. She's a dumb.
She's doing identity politics.
Yeah, she's
they grilled her about.
Yeah, no, there was a zillion op-eds about her completely anodyne comment about being a wise Latina, like augured like the doom of American culture. And was,
oh man, fucking Pat fucking Buchanan was on TV and his face was just bright red and steam was shooting out of his ears and he was firing two pistols at his feet and hovering above the ground. He was so pissed about the wise Latina thing. I remember that.
Yeah.
And again, it's because,
and she's the best justice we've got.
She is, like, by far.
Yeah, she is. She's way better than Kagan. And I'm sorry, or Ginsburg too. Yeah.
What the, dude, I don't know, man. Hear me out here. What if there was like a 900-year-old Jewish woman? Get this. She's similar to a black rapper.
No, how would she be?
Wait, how would that make sense?
You take her initials.
Okay.
All right.
You got it? You got it?
No, it's RBG.
RBG, yeah.
Yeah.
RBG.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Who does that sound like?
I don't know.
Big Lurch.
Big.
That's a deep cut.
Yeah.
I was going to say Chief Justice Keefe. But
ooh,
there we go.
That's a rose emoji display name. Jake Politics like retweeted fucking Chief Justice Keefe's post. quote tweeting Washington Post Malone.
Oh, fuck.
Oh, I got so many of this. I have so many of these.
Oh, man. Here's another example. Like, the reason you didn't read any of those articles that were like, you know, I've been in the Federalist Society my whole life. I've dedicated my life literally to turning back all social progress made over the last 100 years. But here's why Sotomayor is such a good person. Yeah. She should at least be considered. You didn't read those articles because those people aren't fucking stupid.
Yeah.
And they're very successful at getting what they want, unlike their opponents.
And Merrick Garland was nominated. He's a milquetoast beige ass, fucking room temperature milk ass motherfucker, center right motherfucker, white dude. But they nominated him because they thought, well, they won't object to him, and they'll give him the same sort of benefit of the doubt that these people do about Kavanaugh. They'll be like, well, Merrick Garland he's on the same circuit as Kavanaugh. He's been there 9 years longer, and they would think like, oh. Ooh, the conservative case for giving Garland because you know we've
talked about this, like the idea was
he's an amazing fucking softball coach or whatever the fuck.
No, like the idea was with Garland was like, we're gonna nominate a guy so moderate that they'll really look foolish if they try to stop it.
Yeah.
You know, like they'll
look crazy.
They'll look real bad.
They'll,
you know,
look so extreme.
Like they didn't win an election like 2 years before by being like, we're gonna turn Iowa into Rhodesia. Everyone didn't know they were nuts and they benefited from gerrymandering and this dark money network. You can't, like, if they had been explicitly running on since 2010, we're absolutely out of our minds.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, the one thing that would have been a good move someone said this on Twitter, I forgot who, was that if they had nominated Trump's sister, because she's a judge and like she's actually like a liberal judge, like they couldn't have like said no to that really, because that would piss Trump off.
Well, that is true. It would have pissed him off. That's true.
But also,
it would have very much. I mean, because you know, they had a game plan, and they were very well funded, and they had all of the cards in denying Garland the seat. There was nothing anyone could really do about it once they decided that they were going to ignore those norms, and then there was really nothing to be done. I mean, really, the criticism of Obama and those guys is really just that they nominated Garland in the first place, someone who no one on earth could get excited for, and then just kind of didn't point it out because they assumed they were going to win. They didn't think it was going to matter. They're thinking like, well, Hillary will get in, and then she'll
put Garland up again.
And which it
still
really
sucks.
Matter.
Yeah.
And I remember a few months even after the nomination, when it was clear that Grassley and McConnell would refuse to hold hearings, that the demand wasn't approve Garland for the Supreme Court. The demand was just hold the hearings.
Yeah.
And Garland would go around Capitol Hill and like
they
do photo ops with Democratic senators and just you know. You know, just smiling, grinning, and their legs crossed, talking to each other and thinking, that when this goes on the front page of the Washington Post, McConnell will look so bad, sir.
People have made this point with Mitch McConnell. There's no real, like, Democratic equivalent to Mitch McConnell, whose entire thing is like, yeah, hate me all you fucking want. Good luck. My voters aren't going to vote me out. Yeah.
Reed was a little like that.
Yeah, Reed was kind of like that. Yeah, but just from, like, more... if there was someone who was
Mr.
like,
Mr. Senator, I didn't comp you at the Tangiers. You were not a guest. You were not my guest at the Tangiers.
I didn't comp you. I didn't
yes,
comp you every
Mr. Chairman,
time you came.
Senator, at the Tangiers Hotel, did you not promise me that I would
I
have a fair
never,
hearing?
I was never your guest at the
you
Tangiers.
You were never my guest. I never That's comped right. you. I don't comp you at least two or three times a month at the Tangiers.
I'd like to answer that at this time.
Yeah, you know what? I was present at that dinner.
Fuck Harry Reid, but to his credit, that character is unfair because Reid actually punched a guy on FBI surveillance for trying to bribe him. Unlike his counterpart in that movie. Harry Reid was a little bit like that, but someone who had better politics than Reid. I'm not saying like I expect like, you know, someone to come out there and be like Mitch McConnell, but for like socializing transport
I mean, they
or something.
Should. Like, that
yeah,
would,
they should.
Still, yeah.
But like just someone who from like just doing the stuff the Democrats even say on their website, even that substandard stuff, if they were just would go that far, it could, yeah, it could be. Will never be Chuck Schumer, ever. Mm-mm. It will never be Steny Hoyer. It will never be any of these
Dick
motherfuckers.
Durbin.
Well, your other problem is that the whole, like, most of the Senate Democratic caucus is totally rotten, and the Republicans march in lockstep. McConnell only has to deal with, what, maybe two holdouts? One because he's right. too insane, and the other because she was primaried and is still bitter about
yeah,
it.
I mean, yeah, no, I mean, I think we should be clear, like, it's very, very unlikely. Maybe I think it's very unlikely that the Democrats, even if they were entirely unified, could stop
Which
this.
They
yeah, if Bernie Sanders were the majority leader, how much legislation do you think he can pass out of that Senate? Even if he does all the procedural tricks, he still has to get to 51.
Exactly. And like, look, the best we can hope for from these people is that they provide a united front and, you know, loudly and angrily, you know, have some fucking, you know, fire in you about and be clear and honest to the American people about what this actually means.
No, Kavanaugh's getting 2-3 Democrat votes.
Easy. Yeah, oh, easy. Yeah. Heitkamp sure. and Manchin Heitkamp, have already said yeah. it. So yeah, all barring anything truly incredible.
I mean, this baseball ticket, that baseball
oh, the
ticket
baseball
shit,
ticket
yeah,
thing, yeah.
Like, there's some weird shit going on in there.
Ash, oh, thank you for reminding me about that. The baseball ticket thing is mm-hmm. so funny. When I originally saw the headline where it was like Kavanaugh went thousands of dollars in debt buying baseball tickets.
Hundreds of thousands.
That was,
it was $200,000 that he spent on Nationals tickets.
Just like all baseball lovers.
To take unspecified people to baseball games and comp
for an
them.
Unspecified number of times.
Yeah, which I gotta say, like, imagine the fucking ghouls that he's taken to those
oh,
baseball
Jesus
games.
Or like, if the baseball games exist, like, I mean, they had no proof. Like, they.
Oh, you're saying he wasn't even like.
It was like Paul Manafort's rugs.
Something, yeah. yeah. Or like, because in the Washington Post article, it said you don't have to provide proof that this is actually what the money was for. He didn't have to name who they are. Like, and I can't imagine why the White House would like come out and like announce this, like, unless it was to like seem like they were being super transparent about something that's actually like him fucking like buying hobos to kill or something. Like, I don't.
Wait, no, he went to these games, these hundreds of games, or he just bought the tickets for somebody?
He bought like ticket. Apparently, like, it's like ticket packages. So, like, you can take
and then
you
he was
and 14,
super in debt and then
14
all got paid
of
off
your,
real fast.
He took the whole basketball team to every single Nationals games. And then, you know. You know what? Beer costs at baseball games. Yeah. Come on,
$100,000.
Yes,
I mean if
a $250,000.
There's like no way this isn't just some like fucking nefarious thing where he's like it's like some complicated Byzantine scheme where like the CEO of Merck pays him for like a ruling where it's okay for Propecia to kill the firstborn of your kid.
It was in the Bible. But, it's fine.
Yeah, exactly. But. That was the one story. If he just was going into debt because he loved going to baseball games, like $200,000 of debt, that would be. I don't care about any of the carpool shit, but like that's cool. Like that would be like, all right, confirm this guy.
That's
he's
a man who knows
cool.
what he likes.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, just so he's probably going to be on the Supreme Court, and the baseball tickets thing would be a good example of how a competent opposition party could potentially make a big deal out of. Like, imagine if Sotomayor had yeah, right. $250,000 in weird debts. But, you know, so the thing is, he's probably going to be on the Supreme Court. As I've outlined, I think we know how he's going to rule.
Oh, yeah.
And if it's, you know, women's rights, civil rights, labor rights, yep. any environmental protection of any kind,
right
there probably won't
country.
Be even a single square mile of land in this country that won't be opened up to, like, the oil and natural gas or yep. mining industries. If your job poisons you knowingly, you will probably not have any legal remit to sue them.
You know what? Minimum wage.
Maybe. Minimum wage will probably be gone.
Death penalty for striking.
Yeah.
No, yeah. I mean, labor laws already got fucked by this court, but it's going to get way worse.
So I want to close out by saying, like, we know where this is going. We know what's going to happen. I think it's intolerable. I think the Democrats should absolutely start laying the groundwork now to, as we've talked about, packing the court, if absolutely. Not abolishing it outright.
Yeah. I mean, that's the dream, but that's harder.
Yeah. I mean, the constitutional amendment. The pragmatic position at this point is pack the court.
Yes. Yeah, that's the pragmatic middle position. Exactly.
Put eight in.
Yep, ideal position, abolish the fucking court and the Senate.
And by the way, I've seen a lot of people going like, oh, you want to pack the court? Well, next time the Republicans get in, they'll just pack the court.
Yeah, they're going to anyway.
Just keep going back and forth like that itchy and scratchy where they keep pulling bigger and bigger
guns.
And also,
they won anyway.
They're never going to stop. They're not going to stop if we're like, oh, actually, we're going to do the right thing. And they're like, oh, fuck, now we have to do that.
Just keep doing it until every American is a member of the Supreme Court.
That would be better.
I don't know how people are still playing this.
They got to have the fucking Supreme Court cases determined in like Yankee Stadium.
That's exactly. But like, the point is, contrary, like, I mean, in the baseball tickets thing is a good example of this, as well as the deep, deep dark money that funds all of this. This idea that these Supreme Court justices live in this like magisterial castle of the law, untainted by political influence, is an absolute fantasy. These guys are political actors and operatives, and that is why they're being given this authority so that they can act a political
agenda. This guy hasn't been in a fucking cave his whole life, and he's being called to service. He was in the fucking Bush White House.
Yeah, that was the other funny thing is when he worked for Ken Starr, he definitely thought a president could be impeached. And then lo and behold, he discovered as soon as he started working for a Republican White House, you know what? They just work so hard.
That's what he said.
He said they work so hard and it's so hard to work for the White House that I just don't think it's constitutional to ever prosecute a president for high crimes.
And people have credited him with growth and willing to admit he was wrong. Because when there was a Democratic president and he was trying to get him impeached, he thought that presidents were liable to courts. And then, you know what? It's such a complicated job. You can't be distracted by that kind of stuff. Wow. He had a real growth moment there instead of just it all being absolute opportunistic horseshit with no fucking underpinnings of any kind of meaningful principle.
For me, in closing, like, we know where this is going. Like, this is, you know, these assholes are going to be with us for the next 40, 50, 60 years, you know, deciding what rights we can and can't have. If that's the case, forget the Democrats, what they should or shouldn't do with packing the court. For everyone else, you need to start preparing yourself now to break the law and create the sort of networks of support and solidarity to continue. Whether it's abortion or unions or striking, we need to build now the social and political networks to carry on as if this didn't matter.
Because
I'm sorry, living under these people is intolerable.
Yes.
No person should have to submit to it.
It wouldn't be a civilized society.
Yeah, you shouldn't.
No.
And the only way to live as a human being with dignity and as a citizen of this country is going to be breaking the law. Providing abortion services in the states that are going to make it illegal, that's a first step. But there's many, many other things.
Yeah, like, for example,
they're going to require individual citizens, many of us, to consciously break the law.
Yeah, like take labor, for example, where they're trying to go back. They're explicitly trying to repeal the entire New Deal. That's the whole concept. And how did the New Deal get put there in the first place? Because of massive illegal action by unions, by militancy, by sit-down strikes, which were not legal, by violating judicial restraining orders and things like that, and wildcats and things, just general, outlaw unionism. And then the New Deal existed, and it kind of it co-opted the labor movement into, you know, the framework of the Wagner Act and of the Labor Relations Board. And it's, well, if you're going to get rid of that, then you're going to have to bring back the same kind of disregard for legal niceties that prevailed before those mechanisms came into place.
And if you are one of these supposedly good billionaires who are like liberal and don't like this, start creating the same kind of networks now, not just for the courts, but start donating your money to have a huge pool of resources available to provide legal counsel and bail and protection for people who do break the law.
Yeah. Well, we're not going to see that because for most of them, this is going to be good and they're going to be happy for it.
Anyway, that's my closing thoughts on Kavanaugh and the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
What do you guys think?
Yeah, no. For the definite immediate future, Democrats are still going to think this is a sparring match and that they can only hit as hard as they want to be hit while they repeatedly get knocked out by a 73-year-old man with wimp bone as if they were his own son. But for everyone else, you know those aren't the rules.
Yeah.
So in conclusion, Brett Kavanaugh is the land of many contrasts. On one hand, he'll make this country a far worse place. On the other hand, he helped like 30 girls all named Mackenzie at Bloody Dunk. Sacrament, Eternal Life. No, they're not dunking. Brett Kavanaugh probably makes them all like dress up like Larry Bird.
Oh, yeah.
They do
the fundamental drills.
They do bounce
layups
passes.
Only. Yeah. Bounce passes, chest passes.
Yeah. Brett, who are your favorite basketball players? Larry Bird, John Stockton.
Kevin McHale, yeah. Bob Cousy.
Yeah, like Tony
George Gervin.
He's like, I don't want any dribbling on this team. Passes, chest passes, bounce passes only.
Yeah, Brett Kavanaugh, like his warm, like all the other coaches are doing like suicides and plyometrics, and he's just having them like throw medicine balls at each other. It's like, this is a good old fashioned workout before they ruin the game. Who's they, Brett? You know, secular society.
Protestants.
And you know, as well, when you're talking about abortion rights and Roe v. Wade, it's really fundamentally a class issue, because some fuckface like Brett Kavanaugh, if he happened to live in a post-Roe state that had banned abortion on demand, and his basketball playing Mackenzie daughter got knocked up, he could always pay for a plane ticket to New York or a state where abortion is legal.
Republicans have always done that.
Always.
They've always done it.
Always.
Well, conservatives in every nation.
It's going, and obviously in a post-Roe country, it will be harder for people of less means to do that. As well, it's harder for them to get abortions today. So you don't really have to wait to find and support organizations that pay for abortions, that do abortions. Look them up. We've mentioned a few on the show in the past. Go and, I don't know, post the receipts whenever you encounter someone like Deplorable Debbie or Big Fat Piece of Shit Al on MAGA Twitter.
Smelly Hillbilly.
Donate in their name and then tell them to buy the book.
There are parts of Texas where there is not an abortion provider within 600 miles. Which makes it essentially de facto illegal for anybody who doesn't have the money to be able to travel that far.
So, that about sums it up for this week. Ashley Feinberg, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Ashley.
It was a blast. Please keep us all posted on the antics of the Trump family.
Those wacky kids. What are they going to get into next? Oh, I can't wait till they all spend the night at a museum.
The Holocaust Museum. All right. Good night, everybody.